I'm Mary Patton. I'm an artist, video maker, writer, longtime political activist, and educator. I was one of the co-founders of ACT UP Chicago, ACT UP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, which, as you probably know, was founded in New York in 1987. In Chicago, ACT UP had its roots in a kind of ad hoc group of anti-imperialist queers, some part of socialist, communist, or anarchist groups, some not, who wanted to organize a queer, autonomous left presence in Chicago. And so we organized things like contingents in gay pride parades. We became DAGMAR, D-A-G-M-A-R, which stood for Dykes and Gay Men Against Repression, Reagan, the Right Wing, you know, fill in whatever R you would like. And DAGMAR joined with an ad hoc group called Chicago for Our Rights, C4, for the LGBTQ March on Washington in 1987. This was post the Hardwick, the Supreme Court Hardwick anti-sodomy decision. And at that march, for the first time, it was the first time that people with AIDS led such a march, because people with AIDS, many people in wheelchairs were at the front, and it was quite moving and important. And a lot of groups went back home after that demo and formed their own sorts of equivalents of AIDS activist groups. So we did in Chicago, and C4, Chicago for Our Rights, that kind of ragtag ad hoc group became CFAR, Chicago for AIDS Rights. And within a year, we joined up with people like Daniel Sotomayor, who's quite well known, Puerto Rican graphic designer, queer person in Chicago, who argued, as did others inside our group, that we should take on the mantle, the name of ACT UP, to be consistent with New York and all these other chapters across the country to build this national AIDS activist movement. To discuss the social and political environment in Chicago in the late 80s and early 90s, we've got to situate it nationally. So these were the Reagan years and the ascent of neoliberalism and an economic boom for some, with a concurrent rise of right-wing organizing, which took all kinds of forms, like attacks on reproductive rights, Jesse Helms and the war on radical and queer culture, escalation of white supremacist organizing, right-wing militias, and that kind of thing. And the early 80s was also the period, early to mid-80s, it was also the period of U.S. intervention in Central America and the Caribbean and the Contra Wars. So when HIV/AIDS emerges first as this gay plague, first called GRID, this mysterious syndrome, gay-related immune deficiency that affected gay men. It was met with a horrific right-wing reactionary response by really the whole sort of dominant society. William Buckley and other people were advocating that people with HIV and AIDS be tattooed and quarantined, i.e. imprisoned. And Reagan, there's a famous kind of campaign, poster campaign, targeting Reagan that and saying basically, we die, they do nothing. In terms of tactics, ACT UP used everything from direct action, to education, to advocacy, which took the form everything from writing op-eds to doing public education, some very impromptu in the middle of a street demonstration, some in forums like city council and so on. And our lobbying sometimes took the form of civil disobedience, where we sat in the offices of various government officials, city and county and state officials. It felt terrible, but I think that what many of us who still survive remember is a sense of exhilaration, not necessarily in the sense of pleasure, but in the sense of agency, that we were actually able to care for one another. One of my favorite things is the fact that this particular t-shirt, which is going to be in the show at the MCA, the Power Breakfast t-shirt, which is a photograph of a woman going down on another woman, and with the letters Power Breakfast. This was at a time when there were innumerable power lunches of the kind of cognizante of the LGBT, more mainstream queer world. So it was a little bit of a joke there in terms of Power Breakfast. I think the AIDS activism was never narrowly about medical issues or even more broadly healthcare, although that was, that's huge. But it was also, the kind of like queer style and like centuries of kind of queer culture was evident in the kinds of tactics and performances and art making and agitprop that ACT UP did. So I think the best and strongest actions or campaigns that ACT UP Chicago did combined so many of these things: direct action, humor, die-ins to kind of be emblematic of the grief that we were all enduring, selling the medications as I was describing, performance, agitprop, really hilarious and creative kinds of, interventions in the street and so on. And the Target CTA, which was really a lot of credit goes to Danny Sotomayor for that particular action. We had been involved in a campaign against the city, who originally, their first posters, when they finally did anything about HIV/AIDS, they used the Center for Disease Control produced posters that would, go on buses and trains, that were really based kind of on fear tactics. If you don't do this, your baby's gonna die, kind of thing. So there was a lot of pressure against that. And then the city developed this campaign, which was using these models of different races, ethnicities, ages, genders, but a single person in a studio, right, in a framed portrait with the image, the text image, "I will not get AIDS." So first of all, it's about I, and it's about, I can decide this, as opposed to situating the AIDS epidemic in a bigger, social political context. So we did a couple of things. Robert Blanchon, our artist who's has a piece in the show in this ephemera, he took this official portrait of Mayor Richard M. Daley, mayor at the time, his official portrait, and wrote, "I will not get AIDS" on it, and then actions speak louder than words. I think for me that ACT UP, everything that led up to it and the kind of residues that stay with me and so many people I know and love and care about and remember, is that all these kind of passionate threads were woven together from, the desire to have, to act on really, strongly held political beliefs and convictions, the kind of, art making and cultural forms that happened that intersected with the political activism, the kind of community and collectivity that I talked about earlier, and the kind of almost invisible, there was really no line between the kind of individual or personal subjectivity and the larger one in terms of sex and love and friendship, kinship structures. I mean, we were a kinship structure for each other and tried to model that. You know, it was a kind of synthesis of all these different political emotions, where joy and kind of renewal could coexist with the necessity for grieving and a recognition of suffering. But all those things came together in what was not a revolutionary movement. It was it was really about reforming, about changing laws, about decriminalizing whole peoples and communities. And I guess you could say that because of how powerful it was in dismantling so much of that, that it was a radical movement for sure. You know, I think that it gave me, it wasn't perhaps the only place, but it gave me a vision of what was possible. And we tried to live the kind of world, I tried to live the kind of world that I wanted to have happen. And it was in the present tense.